Well, again, just want to welcome all of you that are here, that are in the room, for those that are watching online, or for those that are listening. If this is your first time, just so glad that you are visiting. And one of the thing that we're talking about throughout this month taps into the core of who we are, because we are a growing community. We are less than 2 years old, but we launched this less than 2 years ago for the purpose of affecting spiritual and social change in our community and in this world, that we would affect change in people's lives and helping people become spiritual and social change makers in this world. And part of being able to actually do that involves answering the question that we're dealing with in this series. And as well, we're a partner church with North Point Community Church out of Atlanta, Georgia. We're part of 84 churches across the nation with kind of this shared vision of creating churches that the unchurched love to attend, because we recognize that we live in a post-Christian culture. While there is a percentage in our country that has like no Christianity in their background, the majority actually have some church or Christianity in their background. But for one reason or another, they walked away or they stayed away. But we believe it's because of reasons that are most likely unnecessary. And we're working to resist things that the church have been resisting for a long time and embrace at its core a very simple mission, and that's to help people become followers of Jesus. Because we believe that there is more to this life than this life, and that following Jesus will make you better and make your life better. And who doesn't want that? So this series is exactly that. It's designed to help you with that. And so I'm going to begin this morning the way we began last week with a question. And the question is, what do you want? What do you really want? And see, it's a tricky question, because whatever comes to mind is actually connected to something deeper. And some things that we talked about last week, one thing that you and I really want is you want your way, and I want my way. And we want to do what we want to do. And I want what I want, not later. I want it now. I want it right now, faster. And when asked, what do you really want, you and I come up with something or some relationship, but the problem is, or some position or accomplishment, but underneath those exterior things, what drives a lot of our want decisions is that we want our way, we want to do what we want to do, and we want what we want it right now. And as we said last week, the problem is if we always get our way, we will eventually lose our way. In fact, if we always get our way, we will oftentimes get in our way. We also said if we always do what we want to do, we will eventually end up where we don't want to be. And I gave you some great parenting or babysitting advice last week, that if you've got a child or you're babysitting a child and then you tell them to do something, you ask, well, do I have to? You go, well, no, you don't have to, but that's what prison is for. Because if you become an adult that chooses to do something that you're not supposed to do or continues to not do things you should do, we eventually put them in prison. And all of us have the capability, we all have the capacity to do what we want to do and when we want to do it, and we've all experienced the consequences of making that decision. We ultimately end up in a position that we don't want to be in. We end up damaging a relationship. We end up in a broken relationship or in financial debt or in a forever lost opportunity because we had our way in the moment. But down the road, it cost us something much greater. So the third thing when we said is that if we get whatever we want now, we may not get what we really want later. And again, all of us have undermined our own futures, our own hopes, our own dreams, because we got what we wanted when we wanted it in the moment. And now we wish we could go back and not get what we wanted, because it kept us from getting what we wanted ultimately, where we wanted to ultimately be, and maybe the person that we ultimately wanted to be with. And then we dove in. We said there's a very little to culture and media that will feed it, that will focus us in the right direction. There are very few relationships that will focus your attention on what we want most and what do we value, what we consider important. That in the periphery vision of what I want now, what I want today, who I want to date today, the job that I want now, what I want to purchase now, the income that I want now, where I want to live now, what I want my significant other to act like, or what I want my kids to act like, all those wants Lurking in the periphery vision is what we want most, what we ultimately value. For example, relationally, if I were to say, what do you want relationally? You know, for some of you, you're single. You say, well, I want to get married. Okay, but what is it that you want most? What is behind I want to get married? Or, you know, you want to look or feel a certain way. Well, why? Or I want to date someone. And if you're single, you should want to date someone. If you're married, you should want to date someone, your spouse. But if you're single, it's okay. You should want to date someone. But what's behind that? What is it that you want at the core of it, relationally? What is it that you want most and why? What do you really want financially? Well, I want to be rich. Well, good. I want you to be rich. I want you to get rich too and invest more in what we're trying to accomplish and in this community and fund an entire year of Project Laundry, which is would just be $6,000, by the way. But what do you really want financially? Why do you want to be rich? And it goes deeper. What kind of person do you really want to be? And this is really important. We're going to talk about this next week. What do you want to be known for? I mean, you may have some educational or financial or career or marketplace or relational goals, but who do you want to be? And see, this is a question we rarely ask because this is a value question. It's about your legacy. Now, when most of us hear the word legacy, we think, well, that thing after we die, you know, what we're remembered for. But that's not the kind of legacy I'm talking about. You know, if you're a high school student, see, I know this. Eventually, you're going to graduate. And people are going to either say good things or bad things or no things about you. What's your legacy going to be in school? College student, fraternity, sorority. You're going to leave at some point. And they're going to say good things or bad things or no things about you. What do you want your legacy to be? You know, for those of us that are parents, eventually, whether you believe it or not, your kids are going to leave home. And what do you want them to say when they're telling the story to their fellow college students or to other people about what it was like growing up in your home? What do you want them to say about what it was like growing up? What do you want your legacy to be? That's your legacy. When you leave your current job, because maybe you're leaving to go to a new job or you're retiring, maybe you're laid off, maybe you're let go, what do you want said about you once you leave? Because they will have good things, bad things, or no things to say about you. That's your legacy. See, these are the kind of deeper issues and the value questions that should drive us past our surface wants that we all have, that we all deal with on a daily basis. Surface wants that are leveraged relentlessly every day by a marketing machine that capitalizes on surface wants. And it even makes us realize there's things we wanted we didn't even know we wanted. Suddenly there are things that we needed we didn't even know we needed them. And they just tap into and create this, you know, how unsatisfied you are because you don't have or you don't possess or you need more of and you need it now for 0% interest and 894 low, low payments. So here's where we landed last week. We will never get what we really want until we discover what we want most, what we really value. And we're going to dive deep into this next week, and here's why. Because unless somebody fastens your attention onto what you really value in our fast-paced, especially Western, you know, have whatever it is that you want now culture, you will probably not slow down to actually discover what it is. No preacher, no teacher, no book, no one. No one can answer that question for you, but you will never get what you really want unless you discover for yourself what you want most and what you actually value. Now, the amazing thing is you don't have to be a religious person or a Christian. Maybe you're just here because somebody invited you or promised you lunch or they're making you watch or listen to this. But regardless of what you think about God or Christianity, this is true for you. But for those of us that are Jesus followers, we take this a step further because we believe that there's a God who's invited us to call him Heavenly Father, not the imperfect, broken, earthly Father, the perfection of Father. And he's invited us to call him Heavenly Father. And he has invited us to follow his Son that he sent for us. But for those of us that are Jesus followers, we believe that Jesus consistently pointed us to look past what we want now to what we want most. To look beyond what's right in front of me and look to the thing that is of greater value. So as Christians, we believe we will never get what we really want until we discover what is really most valuable. And we believe Jesus points the way. But again, even if you're not ready to believe in Jesus, you need to figure out what's most valuable to you. Now, this should be easy. And yet it's not so easy. The problem is choosing what is valuable is unnatural. It's not natural. And the reason why it's difficult isn't simply because you lack discipline or because you lack information. This is not just simply solved by more information or more discipline. There's something much deeper. There's this internal conflict that all of us have experienced. It's that internal conflict between what's natural and what we really value. And most people are never able to break through the natural. But though to those that do, it's life-changing. And that's what I want for you. And I think you want it for you. But it is not an easy battle to fight. It's not an easy battle to win. And the person that may describe this best is actually one of the New Testament authors. In fact, I spoke about this exact passage at a funeral yesterday for a 23-year-old. Yesterday, it was a rough day. The Apostle Paul, he was a Pharisee. He was a good Jewish law-keeping man. He hated Christians. He tried to put the church out of business in the first century, and then he became a Jesus follower. And he wrote a whole bunch of letters. And in one of the letters he wrote, most of the letters he wrote were to churches that he had actually planted around the Mediterranean rim. But he actually wrote a letter to a church that he had actually never been to or visited. And it was a church in Rome. And it's fascinating by that the late 40s AD, there are actually hundreds and hundreds of Christians thousands of miles away from Jerusalem in the city of Rome. And the Apostle Paul writes a letter to these Christians in Rome, and in part of this letter, he describes this conflict that we all experience and we all wrestle with, and he puts it in terms we can understand. In fact, the first part of this first verse, for some of you, you're like me. This could be, some of you have heard the term a life verse. That's actually like, doesn't come out of the Bible. It's somewhere, some Christians somewhere along the way made up, like they adopt like a verse from the Bible and say, this is my life verse. This is pretty much my life verse. I want to get it on a coffee mug, maybe a plaque in my house. If you don't have a life verse, you're going to like this. To make it yours. Here's what Paul says. Here's the verse. I do not understand what I do. That's me. Like, that's my verse. Like, and see, you just need to put that on a coffee mug or your social media profile description. I do not know why I do what I do. I don't understand why I do what I do. Now, even if you don't like the Bible, you can relate to that part because that part is true and you know it's true. Because every single one of us, we don't have to think back very far. And we could think of something that we said or something we did. We could stand up here and tell our story of something we said or we did. And after we said it or did it, we then went and looked in the mirror at ourselves and said to ourselves, you're an idiot. We look in the mirror at ourselves and say, what were you thinking? Why did you do that? Why did I do that again? Why did I say that again? Why did I eat that? Why did I eat more? You know, why did I sleep in? Or why did I call her? Why did I say yes? Why did I agree? Why did I, you know, charge that? I do not understand why I do what I do. But think about it. Why not? Why don't you do what you want to do? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? That's the point of today's message. That there's this conflict, there's this internal conflict between you, between what you value, and your human nature. And this is a big deal. This is not just get more information and get more discipline and I'll be fine. It's deeper than that. The Apostle Paul says, I do not understand what I do for what I want to do. There's our word, want. What I really want to do, I do not do. Like, Paul, dude, it's really simple. Just, do you know what you want to do? Yes. Well, then just do it. For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. And to me, this is one of the reasons it took me a while to come to love Paul. For most of my faith walk, like Paul struck me as kind of grumpy and a whole lot of things, but he's not. He's actually so transparent. This is one of these moments. And what he's saying is, I know what I want most. I know what I value. But far too often, I settle for something less than, and then he uses a strong word, and I hate it. I hate it. Some of you, if you were completely transparent, you'd say, I kind of hate myself. And I kind of hate myself because what myself has done, maybe repeatedly, and you did it, and you were there with yourself the whole time. And you did it anyways. And you'd like to blame your mom or your dad. You'd like to blame your boss or blame the world. And we want to blame But deep down we knew. I knew what I was doing, and I did it anyways. And we know. And we can end up kind of hating ourselves. Paul says, you know what, I understand. I understand, because if I continue to do what I don't want to do, after a while I hate what I do. And hating what I do is only about a half inch away from looking in the mirror and hating what I see in the mirror and hating myself. And that might be you right now. So you understand this is a big deal. This is a wrestling match. This is an everyday, maybe for some of you, every hour struggle that we face. He goes on. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. Now, what's he talking about? Now, the Apostle Paul was a Jewish man. He was a Pharisee. He was the son of a Pharisee. He was a very good Pharisee. In fact, he would have said, you know, that I am actually the best. I can out-Pharisee every Pharisee. I am like the best law keeper of all of them, this very complicated Jewish law. Paul would say, I was one of the best. This was before he was a Christian. But then he becomes a follower of Jesus. And he's telling us, as hard as I try to be good, as much as I was committed to the law of God, I just couldn't pull it off. I was committed. I knew what I really wanted to be good, but I just couldn't do it. And now Paul was thinking about Jewish law, but for us, let's just think in terms, of just a general sense of right and wrong that we all live with every single day. Now, here's something that's very interesting. Now, you might say, you know what, I'm not totally committed. I'm not so sure that I'm totally committed to always doing, you know, what's right. But I want the people around me to be committed to doing what's right, especially if it's going to affect me. You know right from wrong, and you're committed to doing right. You want to be a good person. You want to have a better relationship, a better marriage. You want to save more money. You want to take better care of your body. You want to be a good person on the inside. You want to be rich and deep in your character. You want to leave a great legacy wherever you go, so you know what you want. But you feel like I just can't do it. I can't do it consistently. For he explains, I have the desire, it's in me to want. I have the desire to do what's good, but I cannot carry it out, for I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now, this should make you feel better, because this guy wrote half of the New Testament, and it might be hard to relate to Jesus because he was the Son of God, but you're like, this is a guy I can relate to. What's his point? His point is our point, that we all basically share the same natural wants. But what we want naturally now is often in conflict with what we ultimately want most. And again, we've all gotten what we naturally wanted. And at the end, and we end up with the very thing that end up not ending up with the thing that we ultimately wanted. Because when it comes to our nature, nature knows nothing of fairness or compassion. I mean, you want to know what your human nature is really like, just look at nature. Now, for some of you, you're like an outdoors. I love the outdoors. You say nature is beautiful. Listen, nature is only beautiful from a distance or in controlled environments. Okay? Because you put yourself in the middle of or super close to much of nature, it will kill you. All right? It's dangerous. It's harmful. There's no forgiveness in nature. There's no compassion in nature. There's no grace in nature. There's no generosity in nature. So just go with your human nature, our natural inclinations, and here's what it looks like. It looks like cheating, lying, racism, adultery, me first, and revenge. I mean, you just embrace nature. What a natural inclination. This is what it looks like after a while. And in this controlled environment, where maybe in this moment our natural wants aren't being assailed by everything, whatever circumstance or outside situation or whatever, we look at these things in this controlled environment, we go look at that and go, yeah, I see how anything on that list could destroy a relationship, could destroy a future relationship, could destroy a job opportunity, could destroy a career, could destroy college or future education opportunity. In this context, but in the moment where it's late on a Friday night at the pump house, or you're at school, or you're at your job, or it's late at night and you're alone and you're tired and you just want to escape, in that moment where you want what you want and you want it now, suddenly this becomes a fog. See, and Christians believe because the New Testament teaches and Jesus talks about and the Apostle Paul elaborates on, our nature is broken. There's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with you and wrong with me. This isn't just needing more information and more discipline. There's something fundamentally broken. And the proof is found in just asking yourself this question. Do you ever do what you don't want to do? And you don't know why you do what you do. Where you look and there's a moment and you do something and then either right after or an hour after or the next day, you're looking in the mirror like, what was I thinking? Why did I do that? Why did I say that? I don't know why. The Apostle Paul says in another letter, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, the results are very clear. In other words, you already know. You know what you're tempted to do. You and I know what we're tempted to do. But he gives us a list anyways. Sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, our sexual wants, our intents, and we know that those desires can turn us in a direction, and when they turn us in a direction, it takes us down to a path. And that path takes us to a destination. Idolatry is basically just putting things before people. And all of us are guilty at one time or another of putting things before people. Sorcery, you know what that is? Wingardium Leviosa. Leviosa. No, sorcery is just doing what you need to do to control people. That's ultimately what sorcery is. Hostility, quarreling, jealousy, the comparison trap, celebrating when other people have a setback. I mean, that's like the ugliest thing. You know, you get news about somebody, maybe somebody you like, and maybe it's a little bit of bad news. You've got that friend, and they're like always in shape, and they Instagram the snot out of it. They always look so good. And then a couple months goes by, you run into each other, and they put on a few pounds, and you're happy. So it's like, man, that's awesome. What is that? You know, they have a little financial setback, and now they're kind of struggling. They're struggling like you're struggling, like awesome. You know, or their kid doesn't get into their stretch school, or their child loses a scholarship, and without a decision, there's like no will involved. It's just like this natural reaction, and suddenly you find yourself when you find somebody else has like got taken down a notch. You're like, I just feel happy all of a sudden. And then you're like, oh, wait, why am I happy with that? What's wrong with me? What is that? And so you can label it whatever you want. You can come up with your own definition, but in the New Testament, the writers say, and Jesus says, that's sin. That's sin in us. That's our sinful nature. It's your broken human nature. Outbursts of anger. You've got a temper. Selfish ambition, that people are pretty much a means to an end, that you have to have things your way. Dissension, division, envy, and drunkenness, all of us. It's either us or it's a family member. We're just one or two relationships away, a coworker, a friend. Someone would say, like, I don't know why I do what I do. I don't know why I do what I do, but some of the things that I'm doing, they're hurting my relationships. They're hurting me. They're hurting my career. They're hurting my family. They're hurting my finances. It's destroying my prospects for the future. But before we pile on to another person's issue and their brokenness, something or some things on this list are in us. So we can be quick to judge others and ignore the mirror and see it in ourselves. See, we have the potential to do the very same thing. In fact, the odds are that there's probably one or more things on this list that at one point or another in our own lives kept us from getting the thing that we ultimately wanted. Because we got what we wanted in the moment. And this is a big deal. This isn't just, you know, you hear a sermon, you get more information, and you just move on. No matter what you know or how disciplined you are, it is a daily battle, but it is a battle that you can win. There is a way to embrace valuable over natural. There is a way to get what you want most, what you were created for, what you were designed for. Now, last week, we looked at some words from James, the brother of Jesus. that he wrote. I'm going to wrap up the scripture part of the message by looking at one other thing James says, because he gives us a word picture that really helps. I believe it puts it in perspective, and it gives us some terminology that we can get a hold of and maybe use as we think about your own battles, your own struggles. James says, but each person is tempted when they're dragged away. Now, this is an imagery that we can read right past in the book of James. We don't think about it because very few of us have been dragged away, at least as adults. You know, I know I got dragged away a lot as a toddler, but dragged away from anything, especially as an adult. And the picture here is of somebody trying to do the right thing, trying to engage in something the right way, trying to respond in the right way, trying to develop a good habit, a good pattern of behavior. They're trying to embrace value, embrace what's really, really important, what they really want ultimately, and then something comes along and drags them away. And so for me, the imagery that comes to mind is when I was in North Africa for about 2.5 weeks doing some work on a hospital that my friend was building in Ghana. And there was a day we decided to take a break from all the work and drive a few hours and go to the beach in Accra. And so we go to the ocean, we're on the beach. But my friend, who's leading this whole thing, he will not step foot in the water. And so I start asking him, what's going on with this? And he tells me a story that when he was a boy, that he and his friends had made a trip to the ocean. And on that particular day, what they didn't realize is that the rip current was violent that day. And he got in the water, and before he knew it, he was about a mile to a mile and a half out at sea. And he almost drowned when some fishermen came by and actually were able to pull him out right before he drowned. They rescued him. They ultimately get him back to shore. He makes the long trek back to his village. And of course, like a boy would that almost dies, he tells his mom what happened, and expecting her to scoop him up in her arms and comfort him. But instead, he says, she beat him and said, don't ever do that again. And so, you know, the dude's like almost 60 years old, and he's still not getting in the water because African mamas, you got to watch out. So, or I think of when we lived in Florida, and near where Shauna and I lived, there was a family. They went to one of the parks, and in Florida, there's lots of little bodies of water and everything, and there was something, a little shallow area, and their four-year-old was playing while they were kind of setting things up, and they heard a splash, and they looked as a crocodile came up and grabbed their child and dragged it away, and the child did not survive. That's the imagery that Paul is giving us of being dragged away. And how easily it can happen to us. When we're just taking a step, it just seems like shallow water. Taking a step in a direction, this doesn't seem like it would hurt. That's where we all live. This is the struggle that we all face. They are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. That is, that they knew what they wanted, but they got dragged away. They get dragged away. Then he came along and dragged me away. Then she came along and I let her drag me away. Or this opportunity came and I let this opportunity. Or things got really busy at work and there was time, you know, opportunity for more overtime. Or this increase or this promotion and work dragged me away. Or this old habit that I thought that I had gotten rid of, it's raised its ugly head and it's dragged me away again. He continues, then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and then sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. Here's his point. Sin kills stuff. Sin just automatically has built within it, it is going to cost you something. It has a built-in gotcha. Sin kills relationships. Sin kills financial stability. Sin ultimately undermines the future. Sin brings us to a place where we look in the mirror and go, what is wrong with me? I do not know why I do what I do and I keep on doing it and I'm starting to hate myself. And then James ends where I want to end today. And again, he's writing this in the first century Mideast, some rickety table. Maybe it's inside with a candle or outside, who knows? But here we are 2,000 years later, reading it. And it's so relevant today. He says, don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Now, why does he say that? Because he knows we're so easily deceived. He knows how easily distracted we are by what we want now. And too easily forget what we want most, what we ultimately value. And it's like he's reaching across 2,000 years of human history and grabbing us by the collar, saying, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Don't let yourself be dragged away from what you ultimately want. He says, students, don't be deceived. College students, don't be deceived. Singles, fraternity, sorority members, newlyweds, don't be deceived. You're away from home, singles. You can live any way you want, living in an environment where none of this gets reinforced. Don't be deceived. He says, look, don't be deceived. Men, women who are traveling, don't be deceived. Men or women who are struggling in a marriage, looking for affirmation in another man or another woman, don't be deceived. Something is starting to drag you away. He's going, don't be deceived. Don't trade ultimate for immediate. Don't trade natural or valuable for natural. This is up to you. Don't be deceived. And if you ever wondered what one of the key things that drives me to do what I do as a pastor, it's what we're talking about in this series. It's why we're doing this series. And I want to be really, really clear. I don't ever intend, and I don't want to, elevate myself up here. That, you know, I'm up here and I've got figured out and I just come here every week and try to tell people how to live their lives. I'm right there with you every day. I fight the same battle as you. But nothing breaks my heart more. Nothing breaks my heart more than when any of us, men, women, singles, couples, students, college students, make decisions that undermine their own future. Especially since there's already enough things in life that just make life hard that we have no control over. There are going to be things that make your life difficult. There are going to be things that make your marriage difficult or your dating life difficult, your engagement difficult, or difficult before you graduate or after you graduate. There's plenty of things in life we have no control over. Why would we choose to undermine our own futures by opting for what comes natural over what we ultimately value? Years ago, I grabbed full-time ministry by the horns. It's beat me up a few times because I desperately wanted to do everything that I could for the rest of my life to help people come to know and believe that God loves them and that God has done something extraordinary in history for you because he's for you, and that following Jesus will make your life in this life better and make you better. It's not just heaven when you die, though that is a pretty awesome thing. And we need his help because we can be our own worst enemy. We can be our own worst enemy. And when people choose natural over what's truly valuable, when people do that, and in my role, I've seen it all, I've just seen so many instances. And it breaks my heart. When I've seen it in my own life, it breaks my heart, but it drives me. This is why I believe with all of my heart, whether you're a Christian or not, following Jesus will make your life better and make you better at life. Because Jesus will point you past immediate, point you to ultimate. Jesus will point you past what you want now and what you want most. And even if you're someone you're not even sure about the whole Jesus is the Son of God thing, just take a baby step. Just begin to do some of the things that Jesus teaches us to do. That's what Jesus did. He just went around the whole first century inviting people, just follow me. Just come follow me. And the other thing that drives me is everybody that's walked away from the church or turned their backs on Christianity or has come to see Christianity as some sort of buzzkill, what drives me is to help them discover there's more to it. They may have walked away for reasons unnecessary, and to discover God the Father stepping into human history to point us towards something bigger past our broken intuition and our misguided inclinations. It is the best of best things. And yes, we believe in heaven. And yes, we believe in eternity. But it begins now. That following Jesus makes our lives better now. And again, I'm not the master teacher. He's got this all worked out. I'm just running every day like you. Every day. Every single day of my life. Just like every single day of your life, I have to resist being dragged away. But it's worth the battle. It's worth the price that is paid. It is worth it to fix our eyes on something that goes beyond what we want now, to what we want most. So, what do you want most? What is most important to you? And do you keep being dragged away from what you actually want by what you naturally want? So here's what I want you to do. Between now and next week, and I know some of you're like me. Some pastor tells me to do something like, I'm going to go get lunch and take a nap. But here's what I want you to do. Just take a few minutes and answer three questions. You know, you got Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, before the work week hits tomorrow, the school week hits tomorrow. Here are the questions. The first one is, what do you want most? Say, well, I want a Honda Accord. Say, I want a 2019 black Jeep Rubicon Recon hardtop with a 300-watt Bose sound system and a train horn. I say that out loud because Jesus would use a horn at stoplights when people are so busy on their phones they don't realize the lights turn green. Because he wants to help. So, all right, so I want a big garage. I want a big garage to put that nice big Jeep into. Okay, that's fine. I mean, I hope you get that. I hope you get three of them and give me one. That'd be awesome. But why is it that you want what it is that you want? What is it that you really want? Well, if I could just get married. Well, marriage is an awesome thing to want, but what do you really want out of that? The second question is this. What keeps dragging me away? What keeps dragging you away? And I want to say something about this question. There was a pastor I worked with a long time ago, and he talked about how we kind of live, even for those of us that are Christians, we kind of live with 80% truth. Like there's about 80%, like we're just honest with people about who we are and all that. But there's that 20% that we guard. And how important it is to get into that 20% of being honest. He said, but then there's that final 2%, and the math doesn't add up. It's like there's that 2%, like that is the, man, that's the core. That's the hardest of the hard that we don't ever want to say out loud. But this is a chance for you to just be, this between you and you and you and God. What is it that keeps dragging you away? Like maybe some you don't feel like you can be honest, like that final 2% honest with your parents about or your spouse about. Just be honest with you and honest with God. What keeps dragging you away? And maybe it's not a secret. You know, maybe you're married to somebody. You've got a wife that keeps saying, you know, honey, I really think you need to get rid of this or stop this or kind of remove this from our lives or whatever because it's hurting you or it's hurting us and you've got 25 reasons why it's not hurting anybody. Or you're saying to her, you know what, I think we really should downsize. I'm laughing because I've been trying to get my wife into a tiny house. But I'm not putting my marriage stuff out here. No, I say, but maybe for some of you, it's like, you know, we need to reduce our style of living or whatever. We need to cut back and create more margin or whatever it is. But you're coming up with all these reasons. No, we don't need to create more margin. We don't need to cut back or downsize or whatever it is. You know, singles, like I get this. This was me. Well, I'm just going to keep letting this drag me away until I get married. And once I get married, I'll change. Once I get married, I won't let this drag me away anymore. It'll all be different. And the married people in the room are shaking their head going, nope. No, it won't. In fact, it'll become more complicated. It's dragging you away. So this is the third question. And it's just simply this. How long? How long? Or how much longer do I plan to let what I naturally want now drag me away from what I ultimately want most? How much longer? Another month? Another year? Another 3 years? Another 10 years? Another season of life? Another marriage? You gonna wait till the kids are gone? And again, singles, this was me. Like, yeah, here's some things I'm doing in my life, and now I'll get married, this will change. How long do you plan to let what you naturally want drag you away from what you ultimately want? So please, this afternoon, tomorrow at the latest, just sit down and answer these questions for yourself, and then come back next week because we're going to pick it up right from there. Let's pray. Father, I just, every weekend, I'm just so, so grateful for Paul, for John, for those that made the time and the sacrifice that we can't really wrap our minds around to do what they could, the best that they could, to write down words that reflected what Jesus taught. that are just so relevant to us, and for guarding that in the ways that you did, so that these documents and letters made it into our hands, so that we could learn from them and be encouraged by them and directed by them, so that we could turn from the things that are going to harm us and turn towards the things that give life. I pray for every single one of us in this room and those that are listening online. God, we know. We know the answers to these questions. And I pray for everyone that you will not let them rest or relax until they answer these questions. And then you will come alongside each one of us as we begin to do something about it. That we would begin to be more patient and look more long-term in our decision-making, in our choices, in our words, in our actions. And Father, that you would give us the courage to do whatever it's going to take to stop being dragged away. As we're going to have the courage to open up about that final 2% to somebody in our life so that we stop trying to do this alone and continue to fail. Please give us success. And Father, I believe in you. I believe your Spirit comes as our helper to transform us, to make us reflect more your Son and our love for one another and for you and our devotion and how we follow. It's in the name of Jesus I pray. Amen.